It is great to be able to be with you here, and let me just greet you and greet those who are joining us in the gathering in the FLC, and even those that will be later on joining us here actually in the worship center here at the West York campus and through the internet. Just glad to have you here with us, and it's a privilege for me able to share with you this morning. Pastor Bob is actually probably either on his way or getting close to getting on the plane. Everything we've heard so far has been great reports. And so he and Dale will be coming back. And so we can continue to pray that he'll land safely and get back and be acclimated back to this culture and country again as he gets back. But it's great. I want to just thank you again, coming from the East York campus, to say that what a vision and the faith that we all had in taking that step and trusting God to do that. And I just want you to know that God has answered our prayers big time. And you know, one of the things that we prayed as we prayed that we would help York find and follow Jesus was that God would begin to work in people's hearts before we even showed up there. And I'll tell you, in the last few months, I've been hearing testimonies and people sharing things. And you know what? He did just that. Like the lady who actually came during the first few months of the launch of our campus, and then she came to a place where she placed her faith in Jesus Christ, and she said, you know, I had been sensing that I needed to go to a church, that I needed to find something, there was something missing in my religiosity. And she said, when that church came, there was just something pulling me there, and I knew I needed to go that. Well, we know who that was. God was drawing him to himself. Or the man who came broken, who said, I've been in and out of church, but I've never placed my faith in Christ. He was messed up. And he came there, and he too found Jesus. And he said, you know, someone told me that I needed to visit this church before it ever was existence. And they said, when you come, and he came. And he said, I've never been felt like I belonged at a place before, and I feel like I belong here. Those are answers to our prayers. Or the children who now have the opportunity to come to Awana. I think of a family that they came to Awana faithfully over here as they attended here all the different years and as their kids were growing up. But, you know, it's a drive, you know, on the other side of 83 here. You know, that's the other side, right? And especially on a Wednesday night, it's tough. And so they came faithfully, but with the new campus, not only do they come, but they fill two cars full of neighbor kids to bring to Awana. You see, that's why we did this, is so that we can help our communities find and follow Jesus. And you see, by the sacrifices of relationships and the things that you've and we've experienced, that allows for other people to hear about Jesus. And so I just want to thank you. And as we continue this multi-site strategy in our church, the sacrifices aren't over, because when we launch the next one, both this campus and the East York campus is going to have to say goodbye to some great friends, but for a great reason and a great cause. Well, we continue in the book of James today, and you know, it's been a journey even in the book of James, and I'll tell you what, I felt my toes stepped on several times. I don't know about you, but it's challenging. And today, it's no different, I don't believe, because, you know, as we look at the book of James, and last week, Pastor Don took us through talking about the tongue, and that hurt not only my toes, but sometimes my tongue, and thinking about ways that we properly honor our God and live a life that's pleasing to him. Well, today, we talk a little bit about wisdom. Now, let me ask some. When you think of wisdom, or you think of someone that's wise, who's the first person that pops into your mind? I mean, think about it. Is it possibly like a sage, you know, up in the mountains that you have to go to and you travel? It's difficult. You travel the Himalayas to find the sage, the old wise one, who will give you something, a message that you have to discern and decipher and then try to do what he said. Or is it someone like Solomon? Now you're being spiritual and you're thinking about Solomon and who was the wisest man in the world. Or, You might even think of someone who is just an intellectual, well-educated, and they have this knowledge, and you can ask them, and they seem to know and give good advice about everything. Maybe you're sitting here, and as you think, it's your parents, maybe, that you think back and say they were very wise. Now, I doubt that there's any teenager student here who's thinking about your parents being very wise, but I thought I'd throw that in there. But, you know, sometimes we think that wisdom is kind of reserved for just a chosen few in each generation. And maybe you're sitting here thinking and you're looking around at your generation and thinking, and you go like, hey, we got skipped. There's none in ours. But let me just tell you something. Wisdom is not something that's unattainable. It's not something reserved for the chosen few. In fact, you know, wisdom, it's free for the asking. You remember when we started James chapter 1, verse 5, it stated very clearly, if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it'll be given to him. It's there for the asking. Some of us pray this regularly as we go into different meetings, as we go into different situations, as we go through life. That's a great prayer. Well, if you want wisdom, you ask God, and he'll give it to you. James says that, but then here in this chapter, in this part of the verses 13 through 18 that we're going to look at this morning, is when he really develops the idea, how do we apply wisdom? How is it that when we have wisdom that we should live? So my big idea for you, it's in your notes there, is that wisdom is better seen than heard. Wisdom is better seen than heard. And I want to break this down into three different aspects of how that is. And so the very first point that I want you to see is that wisdom isn't just something you know, it's something you do. Now you see, you know that as we've studied James, that James has used words, some of the same words are used in different parts of the Bible, but as he used them, he kind of gives them a little twist in his own meaning. And you know, typically when we think of someone wise, we think of someone who is. But we don't necessarily always think of someone who does. And that's what he wants us to see here. Because look at verse 13. He says, who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. James says, let him show it. You know, wisdom is more than just knowing what's best. It's actually doing what's best. I'm going to put a photo up here of Ken Lay. Some of you might recognize the name right off the bat, but Kenneth Lee Lay was an American businessman. He founded a company in 1985, and he was the CEO and chairman of that company for most of its existence. You may recognize the name when I say there was Enron, the Enron Corporation. And you know, from since 1985, very few years, that became an amazing company that grew to be worth, back then, $65 billion, with a B, $65 billion at its peak. Amazing wealth, amazing opportunities, and this is who Ken Lay was the CEO and president of. But you know, they decided to do a few illegal practices, to embezzle a little bit, to mislead funds from its auditor, Arthur Anderson. And you know, it was in the year 2000 that they were discovered. It's really gone down as the largest bankruptcy in the world. And also, it not only took down the Enron Corporation, but Arthur Anderson, who was supposed to be this accounting firm who was supposed to audit them and keep their books, because they weren't able to catch it, they went under as well. So Ken Lay was found guilty of 10 counts of securities fraud. It was only 3 months before his sentencing that he was vacationing. He had a heart attack and he died. Now, if you had an opportunity to talk to Ken 15 years ago, and you were to say to him, hey, you know, Ken, I've got a little bit of money. Not a lot, but I've got a little money. But you know what? If I do this a little bit here, if I cook the books a little bit, and if I put some here and a little bit, just do a little funny business on this, I'll be able to make a lot more money. What do you think I should do? What do you think his advice would be at that point? He probably would say, don't do it. It's not worth it. You want to ruin your whole life, ruin everything that you may have built up just for a little bit more? I think that's what he would have said. Because, you know, my understanding is I imagine that he had the intellectual capacity to understand that doing those illegal practices, doing that fraud, hiding things, was not right and was not good. But you see, what made the difference is he knew it, but he didn't do it. And that's what sets us apart from wisdom. It's not just something that you know, it's something that you do. James says, if you're wise, show it by your good life and your good deeds. He says, wisdom is not something that you just know and that you just experience and say, okay, I've got all this wisdom to share with you. He says, it's something that you do. And they see. You know, it's knowledge in action. And that brings us to the second thing that I want you to see in this part, is that wisdom is quiet and unassuming. Wisdom is quiet and unassuming. James says that we show wisdom by deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom. In other words, he's saying a wise person doesn't have to advertise their brilliance. They don't have to say, hey, I'm great, and I can share with you everything. It really says it's just someone who models wisdom. Quiet and unassuming. Look at verse 14. It says, but if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. Wow, those are some pretty strong words, aren't they? For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. I want you to understand that envy and selfish ambition are the opposite of humility and wisdom. Think about it. Envy is the enemy of wisdom, because when you become envious, you lose perspective. Envy is it doesn't just inspire you to do something good for mankind. It really goads you into doing something that gives you the glory, that makes you look better. And really, it makes you look better or ahead of someone else, usually. It's been said that envy designs the darts that failures throw at the successful. Envy designs the darts that failures throw at the successful. I mean, have you ever been envious? I mean, have you ever sat there and maybe watched someone or just kind of observed someone and say, how come they got that opportunity? I mean, I could do better. Why did they get that chance? How come they got that honor? I've done more than that. You ever had that? I mean, we laugh even during this whole Olympics time. You know, you have an athlete that gets on the skis and goes to the tube and does a triple threat or triple flip and then comes back down. And we're sitting there watching, and I go look at Aurora and say, I could do that. and then we laugh, and we really don't mean it. But there are some who would look at some things and say, I could do that. You see, really, envy shifts our focus from serving God to serving ourselves. When we start thinking about that, we're not worrying about who's getting the glory for God. We're worrying about if we're getting the glory. Something that I want you to see, and it's that God talks about selfish ambition. He's not bashing ambition. We can be ambitious. We can be want to do and achieve things greatly for the glory of God, not for the glory of us. And that's why I think this phrase is so important. It says, selfish ambition doesn't inspire you to do something great for the glory of God. It drives you to do something glitzy for the glory of you. That's selfish ambition. And you know, when we talk about wisdom being quiet and unassuming, quiet doesn't mean just someone who sits in the corner and there's a wallflower. It's talking about someone who doesn't have to boast about what they've done. They don't have to tell about how wonderful they are. They simply model what they're doing. See, selfish ambition thrives on attention and power and recognition and reward. It's not about serving others. It's about serving yourself. James also says that the wisdom is expressed in humility. Humility. I've often joked with people when I talk about this, you know, like, hey, I won an award for humility once, and I wore it, and they took it away. So that was a think about that. But anyways, I didn't really. But humility is a way that it's expressed. Selfish ambition is loud and boastful, but wisdom is quiet and humble. You know, if you're wise, you don't have to toot your own horn. You know that expression, well, if you don't toot it, who's going to? Well, no, you don't. You don't need to toot your own horn. God knows. And you don't need to make yourself obvious, because wisdom is better seen than heard. An ardent music lover unexpectedly met Johann Brahms some time ago, obviously, and on recognizing the composer, the man asked, "Master, would you please write here a small portion of a masterpiece and sign it so that I can have a precious memory of this memorous encounter?" And Brahms took the pencil and the paper, and he scribbled some bars of the Blue Danube by Johann Strauss. And then he signed, "Unfortunately, not mine, Johann Brahms." Humility, right? Sometimes we think that being quiet and humble makes us lose out on all kinds of things, because people just don't know. But you see, our focus is all wrong. Our focus needs to be on, what does God know about us? Is it not God who brings us, who rises us up, who takes us down? In fact, he says he gives grace to the humble, but what does he do to the proud? Turns them away. Oh, that we would be that way. Well, that brings us to the third thing that I want you to notice, and that is that wisdom is best expressed in how you treat others. Wisdom is best expressed in how you treat others. And we're gonna spend a little time here, because I think it's really important. Specifically, wisdom is expressing the ability to get along with others. That's what he's talking about here. Listen to how James describes it, verse 17. "But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere." James uses 8 words to describe heavenly wisdom. Now, if you want to go back and count, he also uses 8 words to describe the earthly wisdom that he ends with the term demonic. And I could have laid side by side the 8 words, and we could have spent time like that, but I really wanted to spend time on the positive, that who we're supposed to be, not who we're supposed to avoid. Because I think that'll become obvious when we practice who we're supposed to be. And just to tell you, but I have a friend who, from the D.C. area originally, we used to, 2 churches, friends, we used to ride bikes. That's motorcycle, not pedal. I wouldn't pedal. But we used to ride and do different things together. And he happened to be served in the Secret Service for the president through different terms. He was promoted different times. And his last tour of duty, he's actually now retired and does all the security for NBA, and particularly for the Sixers. But at his last tour of duty was, he was actually in Brazil, which holds a special place in my heart, and he was there, and all he was there for was to take care of all the counterfeit, fraudulent money of dollars that were being fabricated and used. And I can remember, that was kind of fascinating. I was like, "Man, you?" He's like, "Yeah, me and a whole team." And they did some of the other South American countries, but so they were there, and there was millions of dollars that they discovered of counterfeit money. And I said, "Man, so when you guys prepare for that, do you guys take like all the different counterfeits that's been out there, and you spend time and you kind of analyze, oh, look, this and that, and then you kind of have to figure out when a new one comes out, what the difference?" He says, "Absolutely not." He said, "Our agents don't spend time at all with a counterfeit. They only spend time with the real thing." He says, they spend time with those bills. They manipulate them. They hold them. They put them in their pocket. They spend time. They can't take them home if they're doing first. But they have to spend all their time is with the real deal, and they spend all the time. Because he said, you know what? When they familiarize themselves with the real deal, when they even just touch one that's counterfeit, it becomes very obvious. And so he said, we spend all our time on really what is authentic. And you know, that's why I want to spend some time on what is authentic when it comes to wisdom. Because I want you to see what God wants us to do, how James put it there for us. The first that he has for us there is that wisdom is pure. Wisdom is pure. You know, contrast earthly wisdom he had previously described as the kind of wisdom that was motivated by selfish ambition and led to disorder and every evil practice. Well, true wisdom instead is pure. It talks about the motivation. You see, that's something that, boy, sometimes we're quick to judge others about their motivation, but the only motivation that we can judge is our own. Now, yeah, we can observe things, but I just want you to know this is talking about motivation, and it reminds me of the clerk that was in a grocery store, and he was working the produce aisle. Was kind of, you know, not the one in charge, but he was there. And this lady approached him and said, she had a big head of cabbage, and she said, is it possible, she said, I live alone, that I could have only half of this? The clerk kind of rolls his eyes so she can't see it, but he takes it back into the back room, and he finds the manager, and he says, manager, he says, some old lady, battle axe back there, wants to buy just a half a head of lettuce, cabbage. What do you want? And when he kind of turned and realized she had followed him in, and he immediately said, and this dear lady would like the other half. You see, he may have saved it, maybe, but his motivation wasn't quite there to serve the client, to serve the person with integrity and helping them to the max. You see, the motivation was, what do I have to do? But when we serve God, the more focused we are on serving God and not ourselves, the closer you are to walking in wisdom. The second word that's there is, wisdom is peace-loving. Peace-loving. The Greek word for peace used here by James talks about a right relationship. A right relationship. You see, it's a right relationship between that individual and God, and it's a right relationship between an individual and other individuals. Peace-loving. You know, wisdom finds a way to build bridges from one person to the next. I have to ask, do I love peace? Or do I like to just stir things up because I have a sense of justice of how it has to be done? Do I love peace? Do I want relationships to be right between especially me and God? Or am I more concerned with how I look and what is right? Well, peace-loving is something we need to strive for. And that brings up the third word. It says that wisdom is considerate. Considerate. Other translations say gentle. Considerate. Gentle. You know, this word describes a person who knows when it's actually wrong to apply the strict letter of the law. You hear me? This person can distinguish the difference between when you should or should not apply the strict letter of the law. We have an example in Scripture. Jesus himself, of course, the epitome of wisdom. But what he did, you remember the adulterous woman who was found or caught, and according to law, she should be stoned? And they were preparing to stone her, and then he intervened. You know, by law, he had every right to stone her by the law of that day. And yet Jesus intervened. And what did he say to you? Now go and sin no more. You see, understanding the difference, being gentle, I remember a phrase that my dad always used to say to me, and he, I've heard him tell the story of where that phrase came from. And he talks about a man who was in a terminal waiting at the gate to board a plane, And as he was sitting there and waiting, he realized that the sky cap brought up someone in a wheelchair and kind of set him very close to him, kind of in the same vicinity, and then said, "Okay, sir, here's your gate, and I'll you know, thank you for flying United, Delta, American, whatever it was." And then he left. So this gentleman engaged that man in conversation. They started talking a little bit and get to know each other. And the man realized that the man that was in the wheelchair was going to need some help. He was not going to be able to take this flight and be able to do things in the airplane without some help. So he purposed in his heart that he would help him. So as they started boarding the plane, of course, they boarded the gentleman in the wheelchair first. And as the other man started coming in, he realized it wasn't full flight. There was a seat right next to him. And this was several years back, so I don't think there was Economy Plus back then. It may have been first class or something. But so this man sat next to him and said, "You know, I'd be glad to help you." And he was very grateful. So, "Oh, that would be great, because this is kind of tough without any help." Well, he had no sooner sat down, and of course the flight attendant came up and said, "Sir, can I see your ticket?" And he showed him. He said, "Sir, you're in back." And she didn't want to say, "You're in the cattle car back there." And he said, "That is, I understand." He says, "But I've made the acquaintance of this gentleman, and on this flight, he's going to need some help, and I'm willing to help him. And, you know, it'll take some pressure off of you, as so many other people you have to deal with, and I'm willing to do that." And she said, "Sir, I'm sorry, we can't allow that." And he said, "Well, why don't you talk to the flight attendant, the one that's in charge, the head flight attendant." So she went back, and she talked, and then the head flight attendant came and said, "Sir, we're going to have to ask you to move, because this isn't your seat." He says, "You understand, I just want to help him. You don't have to give me any special meal. You don't have to give me any special perks. I'll just sit here and care for him for the flight." And she said, "Sir, I really can't." He says, "Well, tell you what." And he was gentle about it. He says, "How about you talk to your captain? And you explain to the captain the situation, and then you tell him this. A good man knows the rules, but a wise man knows the exceptions." And so she's like, "Okay." So she went, spoke to the captain, and a few minutes later she came back. She said, "Sir, I spoke to the captain, and we're going to let you stay right here." You see that phrase, my dad used to always say, "Son, a good person knows the rules, but a wise person knows the exceptions." And by the way, when my dad was sharing that with me, that wasn't a way to get around rules. It wasn't a way to, you know, get what I wanted. It was through wisdom to understand that there are times that the strict letter of the law isn't the best way. So being considerate and gentle and how we deal with others is so important. The fourth word there is wisdom is submissive. Other translations say reasonable. That word really means able to be convinced. In other words, it's the kind of person who doesn't think he's right all the time. It's a person who can listen to both sides of a story. They can be impartial. They can just listen to it, and they can be convinced of one way or another. They haven't made up their mind that this is the way it is and this is the way it has to be. They're reasonable. Unfortunately, we all know unreasonable people who you can't convince of anything, right? But that's the opposite of what this is talking about. It talks about someone who is submissive or reasonable, and they can be convinced. Fifth word that we have here, wisdom is full of mercy and good fruit. Now, I realize I put number five, and then there's two here, but these two words are really linked together. James put those together, and he does it on purpose because they need to be connected, because mercy, it literally means compassion for one who is suffering. And then good fruit is the action of actually doing something to help them through your mercy. You see, we talked about just having compassion. "Oh, boy, that's awful. What a terrible situation." Pretty much saying, remember the passage that we looked at in Matthew, "Be warmed and filled and see you later. Hope everything works out for you." That's why James links these two words together, because it's not just compassion, but it's action. It's compassion with action that is so important as we do that. That's important. You know, we've been studying this book of James. We're talking about the faith works. We talk about all these things. Wow. It's about doing. We have a faith. We have the knowledge. We have absolute truth. But it should drive us to live a life that has action in it for all these different things. So the sixth point that I have there, or the seventh word, is that wisdom is impartial. This word refers to treating everyone equally without favoritism. James addressed this earlier in the book, didn't he? When he said not showing favoritism. So to be impartial is one of the things that shows true heavenly wisdom. Now that's hard. A few weeks back, the Super Bowl Sunday, Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels were the announcers. I happened to be watching this at a house where they were avid Eagles fans. I happened to be cheering for the Eagles too, but I remember going through that, and there were times when people were complaining, like, come on, Collinsworth, you're showing so much favoritism towards the Patriots and to Brady, it's ridiculous. Come on. In fact, there was one point when every time Collinsworth came on, they muted it. They didn't even want to hear him. Okay? So as I was talking about this with someone who was an avid Patriots fan, they're like, what are you talking about? They were amazingly, impartial in everything that they said. You see, being impartial sometimes is we have to be careful when we say, oh, that guy's really impartial. Why? Is it because he says what you like? Right? Being impartial is really listening to both sides and then coming to a conclusion that is real. Now, that is hard. And that takes, only God can give us that ability to look at two sides and not with all the things that we think and that we believe and that to not lean to one side or another. But it takes true heavenly wisdom to be able to come and look at it impartially. The seventh or eighth word that's there is that wisdom is sincere. This word literally means without hypocrisy. Without hypocrisy. Not pretensions. It's not about image. It's about content. A wise person doesn't pretend to be something he isn't. You know, there are some people that are so concerned about image that they forget about content. Some people spend so much time on what other people might perceive them to be that they forget about who they should be and who they are. You see, being without really hypocrisy is something that as we yield to God, we learn to be sincere and true in the way that we handle every situation. You see, as we've looked at these characteristics, do you realize that all of them point in one direction? It's how you treat others. Do you realize that? Wisdom has a lot to do with how we treat others. You know, sometimes you might think, boy, a wise person, they make wise choices financially, so they got to be pretty set financially. They make wise choices when it comes to life decisions, so their life, their trajectory, they must got to be amazing. They're like someone you might not try to be envious for, right? And then, of course, if someone is wise, then their relationships are going to be fantastic. They're not going to have any problem with their relationships. If parents are wise, then their kids are never going to give them any trouble. They're always going to make decisions that are wise. We don't believe that. But we do know that when we are wise, as we do these things, the way that if we help others, that it's incidental what comes back to us. It's incidental. Yeah, I would hope that if you make wise decisions, you act wisely, that that's going to be seen, that's going to be appreciated. But that's not why you do it. Remember, your motivation is pure. Wisdom only benefits us incidentally. It primarily benefits others. On the screen, I've got that wisdom is not just something you know. And I changed this since we do this. It's not just something you know, it's something you show. How's that? Wisdom is not just something you know, it's something that you show. James concludes this section by saying this, verse 18. It says, "Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness." Do you want wisdom? You can have it. All you have to do is ask God and He'll give it to you. And let me tell you something, the promise is those who live that way will raise a harvest of righteousness. Now, what does that mean? You might be thinking, well, does that mean I'm going to have the good life and I mean a wise person? That's not a guarantee. I think actually there's some vagueness here because, you know, we all have our idea of what being richly blessed is, looks like. But what God, when He looks at us and when He richly blesses us, it's from His perspective. But the harvest of righteousness, that is a harvest of doing what is right. To do right. That's what righteousness is. To do right. So it'll look like, and I have that in your notes, it'll be, really, you'll build bridges. Bridges between you and others, between one person and the next, between others and God. We're bridge builders. Doesn't mean that as we live in this world and there is so many things that are contrary and unacceptable to God that we isolate ourselves and don't have any relationships with anyone else. How will they know unless we share our lives? How will they know unless we wisely live and share the love that we have because of the love that God has for us? We build bridges. You know, that's because wisdom, here in the way James is done, it's not a noun. It's a verb. It's a verb. Wisdom is action. It's not something you have. It's something you do. It's not something you hear. It's something you see. That's heavenly wisdom. Do you want that kind of wisdom? Or do you want the other one that ends up in every evil practice? I think that's pretty easy. Say, no, oh yeah, I want the demonic one. Yeah. No. But you see, knowledge is only as good as what we practice. And so as Christ followers, as the church here at Church of the Open Door, this community, we're talking about our local outreach strategy. We're talking about all these things because we want to be a church that makes a difference in this community, in the communities that surround us, and in the world for God's glory and for His glory alone. So that takes action. Let's pray together.